You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
What's up, guys? Welcome into another episode of Two Peas. So excited you joined us, as always. And it's always extra exciting when we have a first-time guest on. And this dude, I've been following on social media for quite a few months now. He's a hoot. I love reading his movie reviews. They're quick. They're to the point. And I tend to line up with him pretty much. We have similar taste, Colby. I don't know if you know. But let's say what's up to him. Colby Mack, a first-time guest of the show. What's up, brother? Thanks for being here.
Yo, yo, yo. What up? It's your boy. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm so excited we were able to finally make this happen. I know you've been listening for a little while, and like I said, I've been following you over there, too. So it's a thrill to have you on, man. Do you want to tell everybody real quick what top five lists we're doing today? What's the top five today?
Yes. Top five movie fight scenes, yes, sequences.
Bro, yes.
Ugh. So how long have you been a fighting movie fan?
I'm excited, man. I've been a movie fan my whole life. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, when I got it, like 12, 13 years old, when I started really being able to kind of dive into what would be considered PG-13 today and up to rated R and beyond. I mean, I'm going on 44, so what is that? That's like over 30 years. Ooh. I've been a fan of action cinema, and I have a lot of 80s on my list, so a lot of nostalgia from my childhood when it was really impressionable on me. What about you, man? When you were making your list of the top five movie fights, was this easy for you to round up this top five, or was it kind of difficult?
It was a little bit of both. I think that I didn't want to be a prisoner of the moment and try to think of like the last 10, 15 years of how much I'm a big fan of like stunt and fight choreography. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to be like, oh man, what about this kinetic action and this and that? I wanted to really think about what a movie fight was, like what its goal was, and then ultimately what I felt afterwards. So I think I've got a good balance, and it makes me really happy that you brought up movie fights from the 80s. Because if you really want to kind of put them up to like, oh, what's more aesthetically pleasing?
Yeah.
Not 80s movie fights, but I think the reason why they resonate with us is because they made us feel, and how they drove the story and how stylized they were. So it's going to be good to see where you're coming from. I think our lists are going to be really unique and probably a little bit unexpected.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think so too. And you know, if we have crossover, that's fine. There's some that are just so iconic that it may be a no-brainer, but I don't know, man. I like the practical effects. I just always have. I'm a big horror junkie too, and I tend to gravitate towards the 80s horror stuff when it was all practical and makeup. And you know, I'm okay with the advancement of technology and the special effects and the things they're able to do today. I mean, I still go to the movies every week and I love that stuff, but there's just something to be said when they had the limitations that they had and they were able to reach the level of entertainment they were able to do 30, 40 years ago. So stunt coordination is one of those things. You know, have you seen, I'm assuming you've seen recently, that there's been a kind of an uprising trying to get the stunt coordinators kind of credibility in the Oscar season and award season? I'm all for that, man. What about you? I can't believe that doesn't exist yet.
It's crazy to think, because there's such a vital element to the composition of film. And I think today, I just heard not too long ago that there's been a major step to kind of go towards that. I think it was the British Film Institute. The BAFTAs, they're adding in casting.
Great.
As a part of that. So, I mean, and casting is such a big element to how we actually get these movies off the ground. That stunt coordination, I think it's going to be really, you know, up to that guild to really champion, like, you know, all right, let's get at the very least 3 nominations. And maybe in the next like 3 to 5 years, we could see that manifest onto the Oscars, because these are the people that are completely, they get no accolades. And maybe I'm fresh with Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that we get to glorify a stuntman and kind of, we don't get to see him in his glory, but just who he is and how vital that they are to a lot of our favorite actors' careers. So
yeah, and to speak of Tarantino, I mean, he's such an important figure in the history of Hollywood and in the cinema, and it's really because of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Brad Pitt's portrayal there that this has kind of become a discussion lately, and it just proves how Tarantino's just, without even trying, I mean, just by making movies and just by doing his job, he's able to kind of make a change there. So I'm a big fan of his, and I love that movie too. I know you did as well. I saw your review of that. So
I was watching, this will definitely, this better not be on your list, Dragon Ball Evolution.
No, it's not. Just no, missed it. Just missed it.
Thank God. Absolutely horrible film that was directed by the same guy who directed the big hit. I get what they were going for. Completely missed the mark because I'm a big anime fan, as you know. 8711 Stunt Coronation Team, they're the guys that did 300 and a lot of these big films. They were so, like, it's like they were asked to do a lot that there was just a disconnect. I think there's some storytellers that don't understand how fights in their mind can't translate on screen cinematically. And they try their best to work with them. And I really hope that as the conversation progresses, that we get even more advanced stunts. And we're starting to see stuntmen really become in the forefront. I mean, think of like a David Leitch, stuntman turned director, directs, you know, Deadpool 2 and Atomic Blonde, and now the biggest movie at the box office this weekend in Hobbs and Shaw.
Right. And I haven't seen Hobbs and Shaw yet, but in reference to the other two that he directed, you can see that influence and where his experience lies. And I mean, Atomic Blonde is so amazing. Actually, it didn't make my list, but there were a couple of scenes in that movie that I actually considered for this because the stunt coordination is just so amazing. And I love women that kick ass too. So,
oh, hell yeah.
All right, brother. Well, we're doing our top five movie fights today. You know, it's going to be probably, I thought about this just now when we were getting ready to press record, Colby, but this might be hard for me to insert clips because I feel like it's just going to be people fighting.
I was thinking about that.
not a lot of dialogue necessarily, unless I guess we do like a verbal fight, but I didn't go that route. So I tell you what, man, you want to get us started with your, are you good over there? If you're good to go, I'll let you start us off with your number five fight scene. What do you got, man?
Yeah, my number five fight scene is from one of my greatest movies, one of my favorites growing up. I am big into action and stunt choreography, as you guys have heard, and I'm a huge Power Rangers geek. So it's the 1995 all-time classic Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, where Tommy, Rocky, Adam, you got my girl Kim, you got Billy. They are going against Ivan Ooze. It's the first time they get introduced to him. And pretty much, they just got finished skydiving. And one of the greatest opening scenes of all time. You remember that song? People.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And like, they just kind of like touch down, whatever. They're inside of like this abandoned rock quarry. And Ivan Ooze just like gets unlocked and essentially has his Ooze goons. And he just got the entire team, not transformed yet, going to town. And it's a perfect blend of action, comedy. It still had this kind of childlike wonderment to it, but it's the best translation from a TV show to a movie, probably the date when I really think hard about it.
Reese.
Hey, what are you kids doing here?
You haven't by any chance seen a morphological being lurking around here?
Morphological being?
Yeah.
What the heck is that? Wait a second. Did it look something like this?
Ew, gross.
Too kind. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm the galactically feared, globally reviled, universally despised. They call me Ivan Ooze.
Well, pack your bags, because we're sending you right back where you came from.
Gee, a teenager with a big mouth. Not much has changed in 6,000 years.
You obviously don't know who you're dealing with, Mr. Raisinhead.
Really?
Yeah, we're the Power Rangers.
Woo! Where's my autograph book? Ah! Power Rangers, huh? So, short on still using a bunch of kids to do his dirty work.
It was so good. And ultimately, when they do transform and just really ratchet it up, it just completely takes that scene and just made it a 10 for me. But it's at number five.
Well, hey, these are probably all 10s, I'm assuming, so there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's one I got to revisit, man. I probably haven't seen that since the mid-90s. But you're a Power Rangers geek. I don't think I knew that.
I would say I'm a slightly above average Power Rangers fan. So from Mighty Morphin era to the Thunder era to the Ninja, you know, Megazord. I was all in. Then as I got older, I started getting into girls. I kind of dialed it back a little bit, but I followed for a
I guess you had to, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I had to make a decision there, you know?
Yeah. understand that, brother. All right, well, I'm going in a very different direction for my number five. My number five is a violent film. And, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording, and there was a lot, I mean, just a ton of mentions over on Twitter for this topic. And I would say over half of them were probably like from Asian cinema, you know, and kind of the old school, you know, Bruce Lee era and some other stuff that moved even into the 90s. Mine comes from the early 2000s, however, and it's a film from South Korea that I actually rewatched the scene today because I wanted it to be fresh in my mind. I hadn't seen it in probably 10 years, but it's a movie called Old Boy from 2003. And it's specifically the corridor or the hallway fight scene.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about there, Colby?
Vicious.
Yeah, yeah. So just awesome. And we were actually talking about Tarantino, who's obviously influenced for movies like this, and you know, a lot of other filmmakers are as well. But this is just a one shot, first of all. And I'm a sucker for like one take, one shot, and being able to get it all with just choreography and stunt coordination like we've talked about, and not a ton of editing. Just put a little bit of ominous music over just a one shot. And this scene, I watched it today, was about 3.5 minutes long, and it's all one take. And it's a very narrow hallway, and he's getting from point A to the elevator at the end of the hallway, and he literally has to fight, I don't know, probably 25 dudes, and kind of, you know, he gets through them, and it's brutal. He gets stabbed in the back. He has a knife in his back for the second half of the fight, and it's just badass, man. It's just all practical stunt coordination, and it's one take, and I'm a sucker for that, and what they were able to pull off there, I think, is one of the best in cinematic history, in my opinion, from a movie fight perspective. What do you think, man?
No, absolutely. I came to that film a little bit later. I think I actually embraced it right after watching Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yeah.
Like, I was just on such a high with, because I grew up on martial arts films, and, you know, seeing Old Boy, and we're going to forget about the remake with Josh Brolin.
Oh, jeez. What a nightmare.
Oh, my goodness. But what that was is that I just kind of miss the simplicity of what just a good straight up ass kicking film will be able to do. In Eastern cinema, it's sometimes it's hard to kind of translate stories and adapt them for a Western audience because they need more. Mm-hmm. But because it was so visceral in regards to its action, and at that time it was something that we weren't used to seeing anymore, it just worked. Right. It won me over. And I there's nothing like hearing just like a fist to the face. Or mm-hmm. a kick across the head and just a crashing and then seeing one man against it all. I mean, you know, it's great. It's super thrilling. And I loved it.
And in that scene, not in the entire movie, but in that scene, there is no weapons for him. I mean, he's fighting with his fist. He's getting through it with his body and with his fist. So like I said, 25 dudes, a narrow hallway. If he wants to get out, he's got to make it to the elevator. He does. And then when the elevator opens, there's another group of guys that he has to kick their ass. That's when the one take ends, and it kind of cuts and cut edit and everything, and it picks up where it kind of left off. But
yeah. I love how it's almost like a video game. It's like you got to reach a different level and go through it, like a mini boss, and then another level, then another little mini boss, and then the big boss. And it's eat that stuff up.
Yeah, man. That's my number five. And that is the most recent movie on my list, believe it or not, 2003. So there you go. I guess it speaks to maybe what I like there. I don't know. But that swings us over to you, Colby. What's your number four, buddy?
Number four, if we're going to keep within the same theme of those Eastern films and how it impressed upon us, and I guess for some people, this could be higher on their individual lists, but for me, it's The Raid. Mm-hmm. And there's really two choices to go with this film, because it's definitely one of the greatest, you know, action fight movies in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. I'm a little hesitant because, you know, they're remaking it for us. Yep. I want to see what they're going to be able to keep. And I was torn. Do I do the hallway fight? Mm-hmm. Do I do the kitchen fight? It's got to be that kitchen fight.
Yeah.
I mean, what's done in there? And it's such a long fight. Like, I love fighting films so much. And I can understand how it's so tiring to be able to do these setups and do these different angles and shoot it. But like what you said, when they dedicate to like these extended scenes, and there's not a lot of cutting, it makes it easier. And a lot of these performers, and these performers may not necessarily be actors first, but it takes a good director to be able to get the most out of who's in front of the camera and then get the best out of that. And what you see is just this very long and tiring fight scene by two men that don't look like they're not super buffed out. One person's not The Rock. The other person's not Jason Statham.
Right.
And these are men that don't look all that different. There's one that's like 5'2".
Right.
And he's just completely, I mean, all throughout this kitchen, and you just like, and it could have gotten really, really bad. They could have been using knives, and sometimes they were using weapons, and sometimes they weren't. But like, I just love the amount of kinetic action and the way that a lot of the hits were landing, and it was just fun. I was tired almost watching, but I was enjoying every minute of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great one, man. I revisited that one on YouTube as well when we got some of the feedback online. And I didn't want to go nuts with that, with the Eastern genre, like you were mentioned, as you referred to it. But so Old Boy is the only one that made my list. But I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just phenomenal to watch. Crazy to imagine that they're, you know, what you're talking about with The Rock and Statham and those guys, and then weaponry as well. But in these cases, I mean, they're depending on skill set, not only for the characters they're portraying, but for what they're doing, because it's their mm-hmm. skill, you know, kung fu or whatever type of fighting you want to put in there. Yeah. So it's amazing, man. The Raid and actually The Raid 2 are both great. And I watched a lot of those scenes when I was doing a little bit of research. So good pick there, man. That's your number four.
Yep.
So my number four, we're talking about Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. So this is a film that he did not direct, but he did write this screenplay. One of his early screenplays that was directed by Tony Scott. The name of the movie is True Romance.
Woo!
From 1993. And the fight that I'm naming, which may surprise some folks, is Alabama versus Virgil in the hotel room.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Cigarette?
No. That's a very nice outfit.
This? I got this in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Alabama, where's our Coke and where's Clarence? When's he coming back?
I'm sorry, I think you're in the wrong room. My name is Sadie. We don't have any Coke, but there's a Pepsi machine down the hall. I don't know anybody named Clarence, but perhaps my husband does. You can ask him, because he'll be home in a minute. He plays football.
You recall this?
Ooh, I think I'm going to have to look that one up.
So this is when James Gandolfini portrays kind of a hitman. I'm sure you probably remember the infamous scene where he goes over and meets Brad Pitt when he's asking questions and Brad Pitt's stoned on the couch.
On the couch, man.
Yeah, well, that's James Gandolfini. A lot of people may not realize Tony Soprano. Mm-hmm. And this is before he blew up in his acting career or whatever, one of his early credits. But he finally tracks them down and he ends up waiting for Patricia Arquette to come back, Alabama, to come back to the hotel room. And he's just sitting there with a double barrel shotgun in a chair in the hotel room when she walks in. And Christian Slater's not with her at this particular moment. She's by herself. And, you know, he wants to find out where Clarence is and starts a line of questioning with Alabama that starts out very playful. And she's kind of flirting with him a little bit. But she also knows, like, I'm in trouble here. Like, this guy wants to kill my husband. And she will not talk in the interrogation. She won't give up his location. And she ends up basically getting her ass kicked by Gandolfini. But she's fighting back with everything she has. It's a very bloody scene. It's very Tarantino-esque in that way. She ends up overcoming the fight by stabbing him in the foot with a wine corkscrew.
Corkscrew. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot more blood from that. And then she ends up killing him and escapes. Right as she kills him and is getting ready to leave, Clarence shows up. So bad timing on his part.
Really, really bad.
But it was literally at the moment that the fight ended. But he shows up and they kind of ride off into the sunset together and she gets cleaned up and everything. But it was a 3 or 4 minute scene. Very brutal. You know, he throws her into the glass shower. The shower shatters. All the glass shatters. Like I said, she's very bloody. Just her face is mangled. You know, he just beat her ass, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. But she wins in the end. And the girl kicks ass. I mean, this is Gandolfini. This is a big dude. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is not, you know, like a small guy. And she overcomes him and wins that particular fight. And the movie goes on and plays out. So it was one of my favorite movies from the 90s. It was written by Tarantino, directed by Scott. And I love it, man. A great performance by Gary Oldman in that movie. Just absolutely one of my faves, man. So that's the fight I'm going to name on number four.
Hey, no, that's a really, really solid pick. Man, like I got introduced to True Romance later, and it sucks. I really wish I had like an opportunity to kind of grow up with that. But I think it was my roommate when I first moved out to LA, like back in 2006. He said, man, you got to watch this movie. And I was just, I'm a really big, you know, Brad Pitt fan, but there was a lot of his catalog that I missed. And then I was seeing like this performance. I'm like, wow, this is unlike anything I've seen before. It's like, yo, that's Gary freaking Oldman.
Yeah.
You know, he was just so great. And like, when you then, like, when I actually started like reading scripts, I'm like, oh, this is a very Tarantino script. Yep, like, yep. It's got like shades of Reservoir Dogs. It's got shades of Pulp Fiction. And it was so much of that time. And yeah, it's absolutely brutal. Definitely can't have a movie that comes out like that now.
I know. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. I mean, Tarantino could pull it off, but not a lot of other people
can. Yes. But, no one else has that license.
That's right. That's right. But that's my number four, man. And I know it's kind of a dark horse. I don't think it got any shout outs online with the exception of the final scene in True Romance, which is also great. But mm-hmm. I would probably put that scene in like, you know, the best shootouts kind of scene as opposed to a fight. So Alabama versus Virgil is a straight up bloody fight in an enclosed hotel room. So that's my number four, man. And we're up to your number three, buddy. What do you got over there?
Oh, man, I got something that's another throwback as well. And from what I know, nobody's been talking about this, but this has one of the biggest impressions on me ever. And it is the fight in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2, Secret of the Ooze. Mm. And this essentially is the ninja rap fight. I'm a sucker for comedy. I love big action and I love great choreography. What these actors had to do inside of these turtle suits, this is all completely practical and really decent makeup. And obviously to me, if I'm 8-9 years old, I'm sucking it all up because this is better than the cartoon. And essentially, it's a fight where Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, and Michelangelo, not only are they outnumbered because the foot soldiers are all around them inside of this club, but also these two mutants that are not, you know, Bebop and Rocksteady, but essentially, you know, you got the snapping turtle, you got like that little, the little wolf, and it is just great. And, you know, how it comes together and then incorporating the music and Vanilla Ice. And it was just, it was fun. It still had great choreography and it was, I couldn't get enough of it. I'd sing the song all the time.
Do you remember the year on that, or do you have the year there? I don't. I haven't.
Oh, man, let's see.
It's bringing back some deja vu, man. But I don't know that I recall that.
And the whole time as they're fighting them and they're dancing with them and stuff like that, like they're kicking the foot soldiers' asses while they're fighting. So like it's probably the best dance fight sequence in any movie ever, and it was just a lot of fun. And I love it. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2. I love that. It was 1991.
Oh, okay.
Super young. Early 90s. I was super young. Early 90s. But like, it was great. I still have it on a box set in, I think it's somewhere in Miami. Yeah.
Awesome.
Hurricane Andrew just like literally ruined my whole life. But there's some stuff that I was able, we left. That's when we left Miami. All right. We survived Andrew and never came back.
Thank God. Wow. So you got the Power Rangers and you got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm impressed, man. I didn't see that coming. I got to be honest. Either one of those. So there you go. That's your number three, man.
That's number three.
All right, so here we go. My top three are 80s. And you guys, all the listeners, and now you, Colby, know that I'm an 80s dude, man. I couldn't find a way to not. I mean, I even thought about reordering this so it wouldn't be so heavy 80s, but I just can't. I mean, these are my favorite, my personal favorite. So my number three is from 1984, and it is basically the end scene to the original The Karate Kid. Is my number three, Daniel LaRusso versus Johnny at the All Valley Karate Championships. You obviously know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when the climax is the crane kick that Mr. Miyagi had been trying to get him to master throughout the movie. And, you know, this is just in 84. When I saw this, I was probably 10 years old. And you got to imagine a young 9 or 10 year old kid seeing that. And, you know, it's such a feel good moment. Absolutely. It's one of those that's obviously practical in nature and stunt coordinators are involved and things like that. And stunt men, I'm sure. And throughout the movie with kung fu and karate. But this scene is just like a kid that's been bullied, right? You know, he's being bullied throughout the movie. He's kind of it's the underdog story. He's the poster child for the underdog. And he's able to overcome it in that one moment. And you just get the proud look on his teacher's face, Mr. Miyagi, just kind of smiling and grinning in agreement in the audience while the crowd rushes on stage to greet Daniel. And he's overcome the odds in that one moment. In that whole movie, he's at odds with Johnny and his crew and Cobra Kai. And he's able to overcome it, man. And it's powerful. And you got, you're the best around. You know, the cheesy 80s tune. This is Blair. Blaring in the background, bro. And your heart's pumping. Good. Especially if you're a young kid, man. I mean, I know if I feel that way in my 40s, then I can only imagine what I felt when I was 10, 12 years old seeing movies like this. The sequel's awesome, too. I could have picked some fights from the Karate Kid sequel. But yeah, man, it's just a feel-good movie, and it's one of my first memories of, you know, just goosebumps on the back of my neck as a movie viewer was with the Karate Kid. And it just got me, man. So I had to name it as one of my favorite fights is Daniel beating Johnny in the championships there in the Karate Kid. That franchise?
Absolutely. Like, I you know, I'm an 80s baby, 90s kid, I was born in 86. So I missed initially the Karate Kid, but I got to it later when the next Karate Kid came out. It made me want to go back. Shout out to Hilary Swank. Oh, man, she was so great. She had like a little bit more cool factor, you know, than what Johnson had. But like, no, it was great. And what's great about the 80s is that all the themes are so strong and they're so emblematic of where we were during that time that everybody can be able to feel it. You know, the social pressure, you know, the different class systems inside of school, feeling a little bit different and awkward. And then, you know, at the time, martial arts was what everybody wanted to do. You know, like I had nunchucks from as early as like I can remember to be able to swing them and stuff like that. I took karate classes. Yeah. And then we all tried to do the crane kick and everybody did it wrong. We were doing bicycle kicks.
Right, like, right.
Yeah, the crane kick is very different because you got to land back on that same leg. It's a little bit more challenging, but my Karate Kid, and maybe if you'll know this movie, is Sidekicks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
With Chuck Norris.
Yeah, no, I could see that. Did you?
And it was so similar. I was like, oh, wow, they just pretty much stole Karate Kid, but it's okay. I forget the actor's name from Sequest.
I don't remember it to that level, but you're probably right. I mean, people, especially like you're saying, when it was an era, so it was like karate was like the hip thing, especially to tell cinematically. Absolutely. So people were trying to put it in where they could, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Karate Kid just blew up. I mean, I don't know if they knew. I think it was Touchstone. I don't know if Touchstone knew they had a gold mine on their hands or not. I mean, Ralph Macchio was a no name.
Yep.
I mean, Pat Morita. I mean, I think he had done some Asian cinema, but he'd never done anything in America that was super popular. Elizabeth Shue hadn't even really blown up yet because Adventures in Babysitting and that stuff came later. So it was kind of like blindsided everyone. And to your point, I'm sure the karate world in the 80s just went nuts after this movie came out. Like you said, kids taking karate and martial arts. Man.
But yo, honestly, you think about it, it's a PG film, but like I love how the PG rating was so like flimsy back then. Mm-hmm. Cause like when you rewatch this movie, like the language is pretty tough. Like the kids in Cobra Kai are certified psychopaths.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All of them. And to think, you know, 30 something years later, now we have this YouTube series that's just blowing up. Mm-hmm. And that tells you like there's some films that like nowadays they don't have the potential of being like a cultural touchstone. Mm-hmm. Like it's a lot of the films that we grew up with. And, you know, I think it's amazing. So that's definitely a great, you know, fight sequence that had a lot of drama to it because you didn't know where it was going to go. And it's probably one of the most satisfying endings that you're going to see in that type of movie.
Right, right. It just feels good, man. It just makes you feel good. You know, he's finally the kid that's been getting bullied is finally the winner, you know, and it's something that you hadn't seen throughout the whole movie. So it was really cool. It was like an underdog story, pretty classic, you know, but I love it. So that's my number. What was that? My number three, right? Yeah, it's my number
three. Your number three.
So what's your runner up, man? What's your number two?
All right. Number two. I'm going to have to go ahead. And it was tough. It really, really was. I was like, do I want to do something? It was kind of close. So I kind of met in the middle. I have Neo, not versus Agent Smith.
Oh, okay.
Versus Morpheus.
Oh,
the training scene. There's something about that fight because it's the first time that, you know, Keanu Reeves' character, Neo, is having the full realization of what his potential is. He doesn't see it in himself. It's something that Morpheus only sees in him. And there's like this awakening and the cutbacks between what's going on inside of the Matrix and what's happening, you know, inside of the ship, and seeing how his, you know, his body is twitching and responding. And it's like a mix of what the wire work that we got with inside of Crouching Tiger and Hidden Dragon, but still had some really great, you know, fight cinematography that made everything feel real. Like there was like a fantasy to it, but then a very kind of rough element to it as well. And I'm a big Larry Fishburne guy. Like he's an OG, he's top five for me. And you know what he did and his performances, his conviction was just great. And obviously The Matrix, it's coming out on Dolby. It's coming back for another week, in a couple weeks. I can't wait to watch it again.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So be on the lookout for that. It's just amazing. When it came out, I never saw that type of stunt choreography before. And it was just amazing. And then it just, then to be able to get the, you know, of what culminated at the end of the film was just phenomenal. So yeah, it left a really big mark on me. What was it? 2000?
That was 1999.
99. Yeah. 99. Great.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite films of all time, to be honest. It's definitely probably my favorite or in my top three, like sci-fi films or, you know, futuristic films that I can think of. I love The Matrix, man. Another fight from The Matrix made my top 10. It made my honorable mentions, which is, that's a great one too.
it's a really good one, man.
So that's probably one of the best opening scenes in film.
Yes.
That's a great one. And then I actually in Reloaded, when he fights all the Smiths on the playground, that one's awesome. But the one that I put at what would have been basically number 7 on my list is when he fights Mr. Smith in the subway. And they have their subway fight underground. Mm-hmm. When he does have, you know, he believes he is the one. And he's comfortable in all of his powers. And they're basically equals at that point. And when they have the fight, it's just tremendous. But I saw a couple people mentioned the Morpheus training montage, and I don't know, I guess in my mind I just didn't think of that as a fight because they were kind of like helping each other. I don't know, I just never thought, but it's amazing.
They were pushing each other and Morpheus had the upper hand, and it was that realization that there was something that was coming too natural to Neo. Mm-hmm. That like without even trying, he just got better, you know, like just and got better. And then ultimately he almost thinks he has the upper hand. And it reminds me of like Revenge of the Sith, you know, between Obi-Wan and Anakin, where essentially like, you know, you have Neo fly over Larry Fishburne and thinks that he's got him. Like he's got him. And then nah.
And I want to say in that scene, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there like a moment, like a quick second when Larry Fishburne kind of looks like has a revelation in his face too, where he's like, holy shit, this guy's better than I thought he was.
Because he was just, he was adapting so quick and he was learning. And it's funny because I think it cuts back to Joey
Pants.
Joey Pants cutting back and they're like, yo, I think he's learning. Like they can see it. Like it's like a computer.
Right.
And it was just so awesome. And man, that franchise, granted the second and third were definitely the weaker, you know, of the trilogy. Mm. And I'm excited to see this possibilities of them trying to, you know, continue the story on. But man, it left a mark. You ever play that video game?
No, I never did. No.
Oh my God. There's nothing ever like it. Like, I think that's what inspired a lot of the video games that we come out now. It's just, it did something that was super unique. And
yeah, I love The Matrix, man. It's a great, great series. I think it was a good trilogy. I mean, the third was the weakest for me, but I thought Reloaded was awesome. I mean, that chase scene on the freeway there and just,
they bought a whole freeway. Yeah. Like, they built an entire freeway. I think it was like a couple miles of freeway to shoot this thing on. And just even with the albino, like ghost twins and stuff like that, it's so out there. Like, the Wachowskis, you know, say what you will about what they do, you know, like, you know, not on film sets, stuff like that, but like, that's a really brilliant mind. And you could really see the amount of love that they have in marrying, you know, Eastern cinema, you know, with sci-fi, with Western cinema. And you just,
I agree, man. Great pick, buddy. Great pick. So the Matrix, Neo versus Morpheus is your runner up. My runner up is arguably, and there could be an argument made, and I wouldn't argue with the person that made it, that this could be one of the most iconic scenes, period, in cinematic history. It's definitely one of the most iconic fight scenes, but I just mean in general. And it is from The Empire Strikes Back in 1980 when Darth Vader finally fights Luke, who, of course, we find out is his son. From The Empire Strikes Back, you a Star Wars fan?
I am. Yeah. I got I got to the franchise late.
Mm-hmm. Well, naturally, because so you said you were born in 86, right?
Yeah. So my first introduction was Phantom Menace.
Oh, yikes.
So okay. it was really tough to go Phantom Menace and see that and be like, wait. So the next one is ahead of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm seeing old Obi-Wan and I'm seeing Darth Vader.
Well, you know, I mean, we're talking 1980 here. So the sequel came out in 1980, and this is early 80s. This is obviously practical in nature and from an effect standpoint. And it's a lightsaber fight. It's a lightsaber duel for the most part. There's some physical elements in it, too. But for the most part, it's a lightsaber fight. And, you know, Vader is one of the most ominous, recognizable, historic villains ever in movies. Yeah. And Luke Skywalker is one of the greatest hero names in movies. Mm-hmm. And you have these two. And they weren't in 1980. You know, that's what you have to remember. In 1980, it was just Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker. But when you look now in 2019 and going into the future, I mean, Luke Skywalker is on a short list of the greatest cinematic heroes, and Vader's on a very short list of the greatest cinematic villains. And in 1980, you have them clashing for the first time. And not only that, you get the just revelation, you know, I am your father, which, say whatever you want, and people that hate Star Wars can say whatever they want. That is one of the most iconic lines ever uttered in movies. And it's just, this was the fight that led to that, and he got his hand cut off, and we get the revelation. And I mean, come on, dude. I mean, there's no social media, there's no internet.
No.
You had to go to the cinema to see this. You know, you go in and you see that? I mean, that blew people's mind, bro. And the spoiler is way too prominent in our culture today, and it sucks. Yeah. But this is a time before the spoiler existed, and you know, it was really hard to be spoiled from a big film like this. So to have people go to the theater and be able to experience that, and just the choreography involved, and the, you know, the stuntmen that were doing the choreography, and you know, Mark Hamill's great. Like I said, Darth Vader is so iconic, and just the impression that it left on cinema of, you know, I am your father, and that revelation being dropped. And I mean, come on, dude. Star Wars is making hundreds of billions of dollars, you know, every time they put out something. And a lot of people will say, and I might be one of those people, that The Empire Strikes Back, that this scene is in, is the best Star Wars movie. Do you want to weigh in on what you think the best Star Wars flick is?
Because I came in late, I think it's almost unfair for me to be a part of the argument.
Yeah,
I
mean,
as lovers of films, when films come out, they're very much of their time. And if you miss that wave, you're going to miss a part of that magic of what makes it that.
That's true.
So you really do have to catch it. And I'm pretty sure if I wasn't introduced to the prequels first, my affinity would grow differently. I can appreciate the work that was put into that because there was more drama to the fight. Mm-hmm. And like you said, imagine like when there was no spoiler culture, there was no internet, you know, you had years in between these films coming out. One, not knowing if the film's coming out, like literally you had to wait, there's another Star Wars movie?
Right.
Like I had to look into my paper and just see what movie I was going to watch. I didn't know there was a Star Wars movie because you didn't pay a whole bunch of money to go see commercials and stuff like that. So all that drama that was put in, and then you had no idea that this was his dad. And it's crazy because like now we have a fight between Batman and Superman, and one person said that, oh, my mother and I, we have the same name. But it's like, oh, you see those similarities there. It's okay in one movie, but not in another one. It's just because of the time that we live in. It was absolutely amazing to be able to have that. And you're dealing with like Darth Vader's mental manipulation throughout the fight as he's talking to his son. And then getting the, you know, James Earl Jones, that husk and the voice, and it sounds very reverential. It's almost like, you know, like a renaissance, you know? And it was really cool. So my favorite Star Wars film, I get so much shit for this, is Attack of the Clones.
Really? Well, it's better than what you could have said.
That's the thing. It appeals to all of my sensibilities, you know, as an action movie guy. Mm-hmm. Like I saw the puppet Yoda inside of inside the original trilogy, but then I see Yoda literally drop his little staff down and float his lightsaber to them and then go toe to toe with Count Dooku. Like that just, it blew me away. So like that is my favorite.
I could see that.
Fight sequence. So that's why it has such a strong impression for me. And then also when I watched that film, I was not the critic that I am today.
And
so I was not dissecting it.
And you're, and you're onto something there too. Cause I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars junkie. Andy's even a bigger fan than I am, my partner here. Mm. But I mean, it's a product of the era, like you said, you know, so I grew up in the 80s. So those are always going to have a nostalgia built into me where that won't be the case to people that got into the 90s and 2000s and then, you know, became quote unquote Star Wars fans. But I've seen different like studies or whatever you want to call it of parents, and they'll literally have like just there's groups on Facebook, bro, where parents, Star Wars parents, can join because they want to know the best way to introduce their children to Star Wars. You know, do I start with episode one and go through, or do I start with the way they were released theatrically?
There was a name for one of those watching orders, and I forget. It was like, and it wasn't chronological. It wasn't even the way of the release, but it's like something else on the best way to be able to watch it.
Yeah.
But I could, I enjoyed. I'm excited for, you know, Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, me too, bro.
Really interested to see, you know, where it goes. I'm a lover of sci-fi films. Like, one of my favorite sci-fi films of all time is The Fifth Element. And like, even let me tell you something. Yo, shout out to Mila Jovovich. Like, some of the fight scenes.
I was gonna say maybe that could have made your list easily. Yeah.
My honorable mentions can be crazy. Like, there's so much stuff there. So I really love what that represents to people. And also, it was a time where, with all the crazy stuff that was going on just in America, like, we can really appreciate something where it transported to a place far, far away. And it follows the hero's journey. And a lot of people were able to see themselves as Luke, or see themselves, you know, as all these different people, as Han or as Leia. Right. So, and I completely get it. And I'll never knock it. Like, I don't think that there's a bad Star Wars story. I mean, say what you want about Phantom Menace, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a race car movie in space.
Right.
I can't knock that. You know, with that, what is it, Duel of the Fates scene? Like, that, come on, that's great.
Yeah. You know, you get into the habit, or I should say I get into the habit of ranking these things, you know, and trying to rank them on merit. And, you know, but at the end of the day, you enjoy them all if you're a Star Wars fan. You know, you're going to find something to critique. And that's why these people that go crazy and sign petitions to redo The Last Jedi, it's like, bro, just enjoy what was made for you. Like, they're literally making this for the people to enjoy, and you just want to dissect it because it wasn't what you would have done, which would have been predictable. I mean, let's be honest, you know. So I loved The Last Jedi, and, you know, it got a lot of heat from quote unquote Star Wars, you know, purist or whatever you want to call them. But anyway, so that's my number two from The Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker. And that leads us up to our number ones, man. I'm excited. You've surprised me, bro. You're bringing some you're bringing some heat, man. I'm curious. What's your number one fight scene?
I really didn't want to go in a place that seemed like, oh, well, yeah, that's everybody's number one. I really like to think about what affected me. And it doesn't have to be like this expert choreographed fight sequence that's super aesthetically pleasing, but what just hit me in a way and just left an indelible impression on my life cinematically, and that is Bruce Lee Boy in The Last Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Lead time's over, boy.
Ain't this beautiful, huh?
I love it. I love it.
This is theater!
Now, when I say, who's the master, you say, who's the master?
And it's a fight between him and Sho Nuff. And essentially, it's great. It's a Motown. It's a Motown Records movie.
Right.
And it has an amazing soundtrack. You've pretty much got this last scene where they're inside of like a parking structure, like some type of abandoned building. And, you know, it's finally come together that Sho Nuff has the power that has been rumored. And it's this red glow, but it's kind of like, it's almost like the Force, but like the negative Force. And, you know, it's just like right when, you know, he's getting his ass handed to him. And like, it just sounds like so vicious, and being slapped and then being drowned. And then he recants, you know, seeing all these people that matter to him, his family and the family's business and stuff like that. Everybody who's counting on him to be the savior of Harlem. And then he rises up out the water, and there's a slow motion shot. And like, I love it because it shoots it like three times, and like the water drips off of him. And then you just see the glow start emanating from him. And you just hear this, "You are the last dragon." And it just, oh my God. And I think because of the music, it made it that much like that was my first black superhero that I got to see on the screen for me.
Yeah.
And it just meant the world to me to be able to see him. And then just the way that he moved and all of his kicks were so crisp. And like mm-hmm. I said, it was at that time where there were martial arts films that came out every year. And I mean, I could have put like, it was really, really good. So it was a lot of back and forth. And I just loved the drama. And I loved how theatrical that everything was, you know, how, right. you know, Show Enough was, how Bruce Lee Ware was. And it was awesome.
That is awesome, man. And that's one that I don't think I watched that scene though, which kind of bums me out now, but we got a lot of shout outs for The Last Dragon and just Bruce Lee in general. And I watched some clips on YouTube, but I don't think I glossed over that one again. I have seen it and it's mm-hmm. amazing. And it's actually interesting that you mentioned having the black representation there when you hear my number one, but great pick. So Bruce Lee versus I'm not black, by the way, but
it's all right.
But
it's all right.
I think Bruce, that my number one will speak to you as well, is what I'm saying. So there you go, man. I'll tell you what, as nobody's going to tell you, that's not an interesting top five. I didn't say it. Very well rounded. I like it, man. So that's
Colby
Stuff. I'll have you wrap it up here in a second. But first, let me give my number one. So my number one is from one of my favorite filmmakers, which biases me a little bit. He has been making movies since the 70s and still up until today. He's much more in the limelight now as like a producer and a writer. But he in the 80s was his prime, man. I mean, he was putting out stuff. Everything he put out, I loved. It has a cult following. I've gone to see a lot of these, including the one I'm going to name at number one on the big screen and like vintage viewings that they'll release at my Alamo Draft House. Mm-hmm. The movie is called They Live from 1988, another 80s film. John Carpenter is the director. And it's a scene with Rowdy Roddy Piper, who, of course, from WWF and WWE fame, versus character actor Keith David in a back alley. Have you seen this, first of all? Should I set this up or you've seen this?
Keith David, the voice of voices. I've seen it. Oh, man.
Absolutely, man. So Keith David, just an amazing character actor. Just so good. He was also in Carpenter's The Thing. I loved him in that. He's been in a ton of stuff.
He's been in, I think he has like almost 200 credits.
Yeah, absolutely. But this scene, man. Okay, so Roddy Piper's character in the movie, who's the main star of the film, you know, just to give everybody a quick wrap up, it's a sci-fi film at its core. But, you know, it's got a little element of horror built in there and a lot of comedy built in there. I don't know if that was intentional or if it's because it's a product of its time, but either way, it's a fun
accident.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a fun watch, you know, but Roddy Piper gets these sunglasses that allow him to see what people on the street are actually aliens. So he puts the glasses on because some of them are aliens infiltrating Earth, and then some of them are just, you know, us humans. And if he's wearing the glasses, he's able to see who's who. And he's trying to get Keith David, his buddy that he works with, to put on the glasses to see this. And Keith David won't do it. He's like, I'm not going to put on the fucking glasses. I don't want the glasses. And so they literally, and they're best friends, you know what I mean? So they're friends. And they literally get into a brawl over the fact that Keith David won't try on these sunglasses.
Wait! Hey! You better find yourself someplace to hide and keep praying nobody ever finds you.
Try these on.
Look, you crazy mother.
Put these on.
Hey! Stay away from me.
I'm telling you, you dumb son of a... I'm trying to save you and your family's life.
You couldn't even save your own!
I'm giving you a choice. Either put on these glasses or start eating that trash can.
Not this year.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Come on. Come on!
And it's long. It's like a 7 or 8 minute fight scene of them just beating the shit out of each other over this really stupid reason. But it's all practical stunts built in. It's all fist fighting. You know, the set design is really cool because it's like a graffiti on the walls. It's an 80s. It's pure 80s when you look at it, of what they're surrounded by. And, you know, I came here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum. You know what I mean? So it's just funny. It's exciting and it's funny.
It really is.
And it's just enjoyable, man. It's definitely my favorite part of this movie too. Is that sequence. But I love Keith David. I love the fight. So I love John Carpenter. So that's my number one, man.
And like you said, it's the greatest fist fight in cinematic history for a lot of people, because that's exactly what it is. These are just two every dudes. And yes, great at, you know, Roddy Piper. You know, he was a famed wrestler at the time. And, you know, RIP, you know, to the man.
Uh-huh.
But like, you know, just seeing this. And at that time, you had a lot of films that were kind of very similar to it. You got Men's dudes, men, just, you know, bare knuckle, just, you know, and slugging it out. And I think, like, it was shot really well. They shot, like, a lot of wide angles, and then we, like, know the right ways to be able to get up close, because both these men, you know what I admired a lot of these actors is that, you know, granted, while we need to, like, really glorify the stuntmen that are paid to, like, do these jobs, they were willing to get in there, like, you know, do some stuff and get thrown around a little bit. And you could tell, you know, and, you know, this film I saw, obviously, you know, I don't think I was born when it came out. So
88. You know, so, yeah, you
I was,
barely.
I was really, really young. You know, definitely I didn't get a, you know, chance to really enjoy it. But when I went back and I saw it, because it had such a huge cult following, I was like, yo, this is great. Yeah. Like, this is, oh man, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's a good number one right there.
And I got to see this last year on the big screen, which of course I'd never gotten an opportunity to do. I'd only seen it at home or on the small screen. And my local Alamo played it again, and they were handing out sunglasses to everybody that came. And, you know, it was really cool.
That's so cool.
And just to see that scene on the big screen, man, it was worth it. It was so cool. And like you said, they're just having fun almost, and, you know, getting their asses kicked, but they're just having a good time. There's even that one moment when Roddy Piper's like, oh man, I'm sorry. I think I hurt you. And then Keith David just comes at him and tackles him, and they go right back at it. You know, you think it's over, but they go back at it. And it's just a lot of fun, man. I don't know how else to put it. It's just a fun watch, you know. So fist fight wise, it's got to be number one, but it's just the best movie fight in my opinion. So that's my number one, man, from They Live.
Nice.
Yep. If you don't get a chance to see the movie, guys, all the listeners out there, I would definitely recommend looking up the YouTube clip of Roddy Piper versus Keith David in They Live, because you will get a trip out of that fist fight. Yeah. All right, so why don't you give a quick wrap up, Colby? What was your top five movie fights again?
Yep. So at the top five, in the five spot, you got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You got the Rangers taking on Ivan Ooze and his warriors. At the number four spot, you got the Raid, that kitchen fight scene. Mm-hmm. At the number three spot, you got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, one of the best dance fights of all times in movie history with the Turtles. You got Matrix. You got Neo taking on Morpheus in that little practice fight scene. And then my number one, you got The Last Dragon, Bruce Leroy. Show enough.
There you go, man. Nice list, brother. And then my top five was Old Boy at number five, which was the corridor fight scene. My number four was a little bit of a dark horse, but it's from True Romance. It's Alabama versus Virgil in the hotel room. My number three was The Karate Kid, Daniel versus Johnny. My number two was, of course, Vader versus Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back. And my number one was Roddy Piper versus Keith David in They Live. All right, so I'll tell you what, man, we're going to head over to social media in a second to wrap up the episode. But before we do that, I know if you're like me, you have a ton of honorable mentions, but I just usually give five to round out my top 10. Did you want to give a few honorables first that didn't get mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, probably, and those I kind of kept in the back of my list because they don't have the same affinity and reach me as formatively as the other films did. But after watching Hobbs and Shaw, one of the best fight sequences inside of the Fast and Furious franchise was the first time The Rock is introduced into the franchise in Fast Five, when you get The Rock versus Vin Diesel.
I actually consider that too. I agree. That was really intense.
Yeah, really, really great. Also, you've got Blade. Seeing Wesley Snipes inside the first Blade, just taking on all these vampires. And the choreography was super duper slick and was really stylized and was done really, really well. And then Freddy versus Jason.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the horror shout out, man. I like that.
Hey, yeah, I really wanted to try to find a well-balanced list. And, you know, I think I was like in high school when Freddy versus Jason came out, and it leaned into all of what made Freddy Freddy at that point in time, this complete comic bizarre person, and then just this Jason character that just trying to respond to everything.
Yeah.
And then the Anchorman Big Brawl fight. I think it's kind of hard not to add that there.
Yeah.
And then rounding out my top 10 would be the Winter Soldier versus Captain America. Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that's a good one.
On the highway freight.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah.
When we did when I did my MCU rankings after Endgame came out, Winter Soldier was my number one. Didn't fall from that.
Oh, still number one.
Yeah.
It was my number one for the longest time. Yeah. But after last couple of films, it's still, I think it's still having number three.
You know, I'm in the minority, and I've gotten heat for this in some chats on Twitter and whatnot, but I'm in the minority, and I'm not, believe me, this is in no way an insult to you or anybody else that's not. I just grown weary of the MCU after a while. It was just kind of to a point where I was like, okay, we get it. Like, you know, you guys make good movies. I don't know. I mean, I like them for their, for the film value that they bring. But also, I don't know what movie it was. Maybe like around Captain Marvel. So anything in the last like year, I've just been kind of weary of just kind of like, I enjoy it, but I'm not blown away like I used to be, if that makes sense.
No, I completely agree with that.
All right, so here's my, let me round out my top 10. So my number six would have been, I left this off because I put Old Boy in there, and it's a very similar kind of shtick, but also because we just did our Tarantino episode and I mentioned this scene specifically. But my number six would be when the bride versus Gogo Yubari in Kill Bill Volume 1, which is basically at the end of the Crazy 88 scene that everybody in the world would jump to. This is an extension of that scene. It's kind of at the end of that whole sequence, but just having Gogo, who's a 17-year-old assassin in a little schoolgirl outfit, come down the stairs and just a really well choreographed. There's a lot of great wire work in it, like you were mentioning wire work earlier. And Uma Thurman kills it, obviously, in this role.
She does.
But I just love Gogo as like this kind of surprising villain and surprising assassin. You know, she seems so sweet and innocent, and then she just like unleashes terror, and you start to learn a little bit of her backstory as well. So I love that scene. You already mentioned it, but my number seven would have been from The Matrix, which is Neo and Mr. Smith in the subway. My number eight, which did not get mentioned yet, would be Inigo Montoya versus Wesley in their first duel from The Princess Bride.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the sword play. All right. The sword play and fencing there at the top of the cliff when Wesley climbs to the top and meets Inigo there. Let's see. My number nine would have been from Gladiator. It would have been when Maximus versus Tigris, which is when you'll probably remember the Tigers were in the arena with him. Mm-hmm. And that was a really brutal fight. And he had an opportunity to kill him and there at the end, and he spares his life, which I thought was really cool. The crowd loved it. And then my number 10 would have been the Anchorman fight. I mean, come on. I could not put it on here.
Yeah.
So many great cameos. And again, kind of in the vein of They Live, it's just funny. You know, it's funny and it's entertaining, and, you know, it's over the top and kind of cartoonish, but it's just fun to watch, you know. So that's my number 10. All right, man. So I really appreciate you being here, Colby. Before we wrap up, though, we always head over to social media and just try to give a few shout outs, and I just peruse them. We got so many. Did you see the feedback over on Twitter? It was crazy.
Oh yeah, it was good.
I would go to work and I'd get off work and I'd be like, "Holy shit, I've got 20 something comments." So I wasn't able to like watch them all or whatever. But let me start over on Facebook because we didn't get quite as many, but we have some really devoted fans over there on the fan page. So our good buddy Michael Hill, who's been on the show a few times, here's his five. He's got the Crazy 88 versus the Bride. And he's got a couple that I don't know, but he's got Wang versus Wind, Old Hop versus the Silent Monk, Iron Man versus Cap, which I think he means from Civil War there. And then Wonder Woman versus the Germans in that great scene in the new Wonder Woman. That's his five. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, I think is Wang versus Wind. Is that House of Flying Daggers?
That might be, actually. Yeah, that one I didn't know. And then I wonder what Old Hop and the Silent Monk is. I feel like he told me, but I can't.
Old Hop and the Silent Monk. That may be Hero.
Which is another great one, actually. Let's see. Tony over on the Facebook fan page. Tony Vandenbush. I love saying her last name. She's got John Wick versus everyone. That's good.
In any movie. Anything, we pick one.
Anything.
In anything.
You know, I didn't include John Wick because I don't know. There's a couple in here that involve sword play that I included, but most of John Wick's are all with the guns, you know, and I don't know. I just, not that they're not amazing because they are. I just stayed away from gunfights. Personally.
Well, in Chapter 3 Parabellum, the second to last fight between John Wick and, I mean, he's kind of got the warm-up match between the two dudes from the raid, and then he works his way up to, oh, goodness gracious. Why am I forgetting his name? Only the Strong. That's where I remember from.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't remember his name either.
Yeah. But that was a good fight. It included a weapon, but, like, that was a little bit more hand-to-hand, which was great. But, yeah, when I think of John Wick, I think of gung-fu.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was gunfights, forget it. I mean, it'd be one through five John Wick, probably different scenes.
Absolutely.
And she also said, she also gave a shout-out to Hulk versus Loki, the puny god scene.
Hey,
which wasn't much of a fight. Wasn't much of a fight, but it's hilarious.
Very one-sided.
Yeah. But I loved it. Amanda, who's been on the show several times before as well, she agreed with me. Inigo versus the Man in Black from The Princess Bride. And that was one that I put on my honorable mentions. All right, man. So I'm going to go through and just give a few shout-outs over on Twitter. We got so many. Thank you guys so much for the feedback. Our buddies over at Netflix and Swill and Epic Film Guys both named The Man of Steel. And I know you're a fan of that movie, right?
I am a DCEU defender.
Okay, good.
I love the Man of Steel. Yeah, that fight. I actually watched that last night. The fight between himself and between the other three Kryptonians leading up to Michael Shannon as Zod. It's still great and it still holds up. And, you know, even on my small little screen on YouTube, like, I really love the effects. I've never seen I've never seen Superman that way, even as much animation.
Right.
Superman never, I never thought of Superman as sci-fi. And that's the first time that Superman became, like, I thought of as science fiction. It's really, really weird. I don't know why. I just, I loved it.
Well, that's cool, because it was able to kind of reinvent that lore for you, which is something to be said for that. Matt Lewinsky, who's commenting every week, great fan and contributor to the show, but he says, if They Live is not a crossover, don't bother releasing this episode. So I'm going to still release it because we talked about it and gushed over it. So hopefully he'll be satisfied with that. Oh, yeah. But he also says Simon versus John and Demolition Man. Bob.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good one. Bob Barker versus Happy Gilmore, which I really like.
Oh, that's good.
I really like that mention.
I'm going to kick Bob Barker's ass.
Yeah. Bitch. Yeah. And then Roadhouse Tinker versus the Polar Bear. So two great mentions there.
Okay.
Jameson Rabbit over on Twitter, also frequent contributor. Thank you, Jameson. He's got the final fight from the Raid Redemption.
Yep.
The Bride versus the Crazy 88. Indy versus the Bald German. The Hallway Knives in John Wick 3. I think that's what you were talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then Riggs versus Joshua on the Lawn in Lethal Weapon. I agree with that.
That reminds me of Lethal Weapon 4 when it's Riggs and Murtaugh taking on Jet Li.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Underneath that little broken bridge. Oh, that was a good fight right there.
Let's see here. Gidget Von LaRue over in Australia. She agreed with me on The Empire Strikes Back. She just shared a GIF of Darth Vader versus Skywalker from that flick. Hey. Let's see. Oh, okay. So here's a good one. There's a lot of good ones on here. And they went kind of like what we were talking about, where they did a lot of the Eastern, kind of like Asian cinema. But let's see what their handle on Twitter is, because it's, Nerd Adonis. So I guess I'm not too surprised, but here's their list. The Raid, and they say all of the fights in The Raid.
All the fights, okay.
All of the fights in Fist of Legend. The break-in in Police Story. And then I love this one, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We didn't mention that, but I love that movie.
I saw that came up on a couple of lists that I was kind of doing some research. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's Edgar Wright, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Oh man, that was really good. That was, man, Brandon Routh.
That's a great film, man.
Sarah.
Great film.
It really, really is. That's a good fight.
And then the Winter Soldier elevator scene. The Hail Hydra scene there, which that's a good one.
You know what? I like it a lot. It's just it's so quick.
It is.
Like, it's super quick.
It is short.
It is short, but like it's a lot of fun.
And then he agreed with me on the hallway scene from Old Boy. So no argument there, of course. A lot of mentions. I should just go ahead and say a lot of mentions for They Live. Not too surprised there that somebody with a Twitter handle named Pop Horror News mentioned They Lived. And they have the gift that says either put on these glasses or start eating the trash can, which is what Roddy Piper says. Keith David, right before they throw down. Let's see. The Hera Club podcast said Harry Potter and Malfoy. Are you a Harry Potter fan? I never got into Harry Potter, but I know a lot of people are.
Watched all the films 5 times each.
Awesome, man.
We rewatch them every year. Love it.
So
I mean, the only fight that I would really consider, not so much between him and Malfoy, it's in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. It's the first time that we really see Voldemort go toe-to-toe with Dumbledore inside of the Ministry of Magic. And I was just like, oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I just never got in. I've had a lot of guests on and they just love, I personally never, and I'm a pop culture maniac, but I just never got into Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. But a lot of people, you know, I know a lot of people live by that stuff. So I respect it for sure. And then let's see, MC Myers, which is Film Objective over on Twitter, says The Hallway from Old Boy. They also listed Birdman, Riggan versus Mike, which was an interesting pick, but I like that pick. And let's see, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I mean, come on, man, from a choreography standpoint. Wow.
I'm kind of mad at myself that I don't have more Jackie Chan on my list.
Yeah.
He was so impressionable on me growing. I mean, Rumbling the Bronx and Jackie Chan's First Strike. Honestly, you know, Legend of Drunken Master.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And that got a lot of shout outs. And Jackie Chan's obviously just an icon. If they ever do an Academy Award for that, it should be named after him. I mean.
He got his honorary Oscar a couple years ago.
He did. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just a tremendous kind of icon in that realm. And I like this pick, and I just haven't seen it in so long, but the filmmaking from Martin Scorsese and The Raging Bull when Jake versus Sugar Ray, just that bloody in the ring scene from that movie, which was, you know, Rocky always, and you know, the boxing films of that are popularized always would shoot the camera outside the ring. And Scorsese put almost a first-person view in the ring, which had never really been done before. It was very brutal.
And that can come across as really, like, wonky. But it actually, for that time, it worked.
Yeah. All right. So, I'll tell you what, man. Speaking of Rocky, Nick Palajic from over, I believe he's in Minnesota. I love that guy. But he's got Rocky versus Apollo. I could see that. And then I think you're going to like this one. But how about Jared Renfro over on Twitter? This will be the last mention today because I know you'll like it. But he's got the thug fight in Batman versus Superman was brutal and awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. My favorite Batman.
Really? Wow.
My favorite Batman. Not my favorite Bruce.
All right.
Favorite Batman. And it's only because I've always wanted a kind of a brutal, brawling Batman. And when we see that thug fight and just see the capabilities of what Ben Affleck was able to do, it's very short lived.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I love Bale, but the more and more I think about it, it's not a Batman.
Yeah, that's true, and that's been said.
It's a great film. That's not a Batman.
That's been said before. I mean, Michael Keaton's my Batman. My favorite.
Oh yeah, no, that's my Bruce.
Yeah, yeah. Well, both for me. But my favorite Batman movie is The Dark Knight. I don't think it'll ever be topped. Personally, I just was just blown away when that was released, and I still watch that almost every year, and I'm just mesmerized. I mean, the opening scene, introducing us to the Joker and that bank heist, and just the flipping of the 18-wheeler action sequence, and Ledger's posthumous portrayal of the Joker that won him in the Academy Award. I mean, I could go on. I could have an hour
perfect
podcast.
It really is almost perfect. The only scene that I watch that doesn't hold up is when the Joker's sticking up that ball that he's attending, and that fight choreography is not.
Oh yeah, maybe I'll have to watch that a bit closer next time.
It looks really, but other than that, everything else in that film is flawless. I think it was just growing up on the animated series and, you know, Batman 89 and Batman Returns, which at the time was one of the greatest sequels of all time.
Love it.
It was overgrounded for me. It took away a lot of the mythos of what Batman was. And I didn't think that a lot of those elements, if like Nolan was keep going, he would have to let go a lot of that.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that Matt Reeves gives us a mix of Keaton, Bale, and Affleck into this next foray.
That'd be great. I'll tell you what, Pattinson is impressing me just in general as an actor the last like five, 6 years. I mean, everything I've seen him in, and I'm so excited for The Lighthouse, which is Robert Eggers. One of my favorite movies of the last decade was The Witch, and it's the same director. So I'm really looking forward to that. So
yeah, that trailer was trippy. I'm excited for it. I really hope it. I can't wait to see it. But yeah, Robert Pattinson. This will be the first time he's going to be. I mean, he had like a little bit of action that he did in Twilight, but not like a lot. You know, so this is going to be interesting to kind of see this next transition into his movie stardom.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Well, look, man. If nothing else, Nick at Epic Film Guys will love you because I'm always giving him shit for being an apologist for the Affleck Batman because it was like my least favorite, you know, and we always kind of go head to head with that, but he'll love you for it for sure. Well, look, man, Colby Mack, first timer, I know you'll be back. I'm going to have you back. Hopefully you can make it work, but why don't you tell everybody, you know, where you are, what you do, where they can find you? Go ahead, man.
Yeah, man. Well, you can go ahead and find all of my written content at ColbyToldMe.com. It's pretty much my movie review website. I watch everything. I made a goal at the beginning of this year to watch every major theatrical release. I am 76 films in at the theater so far. So I'm doing pretty good. And if you're not into reading and you want to listen to me talk, you can go ahead and check out the Colby Told Me podcast on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the major platforms. I pretty much just do the show whenever I want. I try to commit to once a week, sometimes two, just all depends. But you'll be able to find me there. You can follow me on all the socials at Colby Told Me on Insta and Twitter, and at Colby Mack on Facebook.
All right, you're the man, bro, and I'm glad I've gotten to know you the last few months, and thanks for being a listener of our show as well. Yeah, you know, I love reading your stuff. You know, I go see these movies, and then there's a couple, you know, places that I'm starting to trust a little bit to not anger me when I read reviews, because I tend to like everything, and that's my problem. Like, I get that. I tend to not be critical enough, you know? There's some movies that I'll just be like, they were shit, but they had good parts, you know? And
absolutely.
People be like, no, they had no good parts. And I'm like, come on, that's not always the case.
That's a miserable way of, like, being a movie fan. It bugs me sometimes when people go in expecting, like, this movie to be trash. Like, I really hope I don't like it. No. Right. I really hope, like, that I spent my money well. I want to enjoy it.
You know, to be a funny story about that, I mean, last night, my daughter's here, I was telling you, and she was visiting last night, and we were looking through Netflix, and I was like, you know, I hear this Secret Obsession is just a train wreck piece of shit. You know, let's watch it. You know, even knowing it's going to be horrible, I still want to see it to just like, because that's what will be good about it. The fact that it's just horrible. You know what I mean? So I look for the good and everything, but I appreciate everything you do over there, man. You're a blast. And if you guys look up his information in the show notes, make sure to follow him and check out his episodes and read his reviews as well. Colby, thanks for being here, man. That was our top five movie fights. It was a lot of fun, and we didn't fight. We didn't fight over any of our picks. I guess we should have talked about that civil. Ahead of time. Yeah. Oh well.
It's all good.
Thanks a lot, brother. I'll have you on soon, man. Take care. Okay.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.